Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Stella Oneko, bringing you Africa's trending hashtags and what you had to say about the stories we've been covering.
And coming up, South Africa's President Jacob Zuma faces a vote of no confidence in parliament for what the opposition termed as havoc inflicted on an infant democracy.
The ANC leadership must choose between the president on one end and the ANC and the people of South Africa on the other hand.
And on social media, people are still commenting on the US elections.
Also on the program, more reactions, as just mentioned, after Donald Trump is elected president of the United States, the European Union's foreign policy chief.
It's still very much unclear to us what will be the course of the foreign policy of the new administration. We will wait and see what comes on that side. But from our side, it will be important to continue to work together.
Stay tuned for all that and much more to come on the program. But first, let's listen to what's happening around the globe.
I'm Brandon Conradis with DW News. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump reaffirmed Washington's commitment to defend South Korea on Thursday, one day after his senior aides met to discuss the new administration's transition to the White House. The South Korean government confirmed that the future commander-in-chief spoke with President Park Geun-hye over the phone, where he emphasized that the U.S. would uphold security on the peninsula amid rising fears over North Korea's militancy. Trump's isolationist campaign rhetoric has cast doubt on the future of the U.S.'s existing security alliances around the globe. Some EU leaders, however, have suggested that a Trump presidency could ultimately be beneficial for the continent. DW's Brussels correspondent Barbara Wessel explains why.
Because finally we might be forced to do what we have been talking about for years. That means grow up, take up our own responsibilities, not rely on the United States for security anymore, and just sort of figure out that we are adults and that we just have to get on with our own lives and close ranks to make it possible.
In Germany, the Federal Court of Justice has released new information regarding the arrest of a suspected Islamic State militant. The Syrian asylum seeker was arrested in March after allegedly plotting a terror attack in Berlin. He was charged in October on account of being a member of the terrorist organization. According to new details released on Thursday, the 19-year-old had identified the city's popular Alexanderplatz tourist spot as a possible site for an attack. He then reported relevant information about the site to a contact in his home country. The man's court hearing is due to be held in Berlin. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. In Ghana, the Supreme Court has intervened to end a dispute over the disqualification of candidates in the presidential elections in just under a month's time. From Accra, DW's Isaac Kaleji reports.
Following a ruling by Ghana's Supreme Court, the Electoral Commission has readmitted three candidates to the presidential race who had been disqualified because of errors on their nomination forms. They include a former First Lady, Kone Duajman Rawlings. The number of candidates running for the presidency on December 7 now stands at 7. They include incumbent President John Mahama of the National Democratic Congress and his closest rival, Nana Akufo-Addo of the New Patriotic Party.
Australia is the latest country to ratify the Paris climate deal decided upon at the UN meeting last December, even as Donald Trump's victory has cast doubt on the future of the accord. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull told Parliament on Thursday that the country had become the 140th country to ratify the agreement, which calls for countries to work toward limiting global warming to 2 degrees Celsius and setting 5-year targets for reducing emissions. Donald Trump, who once called global warming a hoax concocted by the Chinese, has threatened to withdraw the U.S. from the agreement. For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com. I'm Brandon Conradis.
We begin today's program in South Africa, where members of parliament have been deliberating on a vote of no confidence against President Jacob Zuma. Zuma has fought off a series of damaging controversies during his presidency, but last week came under further pressure after a corruption probe raised fresh allegations of misconduct. The Democratic Alliance, the main opposition party, tabled the no-confidence motion against Zuma, and it will be the third in under a year, with the first two easily defeated by the ANC's majority in parliament. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo sent this report.
When the debate on the motion of no-confidence started, the opposition quickly got down to serious business. From the onset, opposition parties wasted no time, calling all in unison for the matter to be decided through a secret vote. The DA warned the ruling African National Congress ANC members of parliament, MPs, to stop risking lives of millions of South Africans in protection of one man. DA leader Musi Maimane called on parliamentarians to stand with the people and fight corruption through voting in favor of the motion. He pleaded with the members to save South Africa from Zuma and others who have captured it.
The ANC leadership must choose between the president on one end and the ANC and the people of South Africa on the other hand. Enough is enough.
The opposition showed a united front throughout the debate. Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF Chief Whip Floyd Chivambu, challenged ANC MPs to do what he called the right thing.
Create your own platforms to remove the post-colonial disaster that is facing South Africa. Because before you know it, you would have captured everything. After he has dealt with everyone else, he's going to arrest you.
But the ANC also came prepared to challenge the motion, accusing the DA of abusing parliamentary processes in a bid to seek relevance. ANC Member of Parliament Nomvula Mokonyane insisted that Zuma has done everything possible to fight corruption and improve the country's economy.
The motion we are here debating today is really a phantom to masquerade the essence and nature of opposition politics in our country and their quest to gain power by other means other than the ballot box, using a black face to protect the interests of the white minority.
And the opposition has warned the ruling ANC that come 2019 national elections, the masses will punish the party severely.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting in Johannesburg.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Now, one day after Donald Trump's surprise victory in the U.S. elections, the incumbent President Barack Obama is to greet his successor in the White House today. Trump's victory has sparked strong reactions around the globe. And in the United States, thousands of Americans took to the streets to demonstrate against the president-elect. Malte Hofer-Kallmann reports.
The streets of New York were crowded with protesters late into the night. Like in many other places, they voiced their anger at the outcome of the vote.
Deport Trump! Deport Trump! Deport Trump! Deport Trump!
It was a close and hardly fought election that laid bare strong divisions running through the United States. Divisions between the rich and the poor, the educated and the less well-educated, between cities and rural areas. In his victory speech, the president-elect appealed for national unity.
I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. It's time. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans.
People in the United States are now watching every one of Trump's moves very closely. And also outside the United States, all eyes are set on him. Many are still unsure how, or if, Trump is going to implement his campaign promises. Federica Mogherini is the European Union's foreign policy chief.
It's still very much unclear to us what will be the course of the foreign policy of the new administration. We will wait and see what comes on that side. But from our side, it will be important to continue to work together.
The head of the EU Commission, the EU's executive, Jean-Claude Juncker, meanwhile demanded clarity from Trump.
We would like to know how things will proceed with the global trade policy. We would like to know what intentions Mr. Trump has regarding the alliance.
Trump had called into question the United States' commitment to NATO. In case of a military attack, all alliance members have pledged to defend each other. NATO's head, Jens Stoltenberg.
This is something which is absolute and it's unconditioned. A strong NATO is important for Europe, but it's also important for the United States.
Uncertainty also reigned in Marrakesh, where the UN climate summit was underway. Delegates from around the world were working on putting the Paris Climate Agreement into action. But Trump had said he would scrap the United States' commitment to the landmark climate deal as president. Climate activists like Tina Johnson are dismayed but defiant.
We think that we have history, momentum, and the world on our side because every country is acting on this, and we're not going to stop doing that because we have a president that may or may not agree.
While many seem concerned about the presence of Donald Trump in the White House, right-wing political parties in Europe have been celebrating his victory. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán called it the end of a liberal non-democracy.
I am convinced that the whole of Europe and Western world have made important steps of a great intellectual transformation in recent months, and we should not be afraid of this, but see the opportunities.
The protesters on the streets of New York still failed to see these opportunities. They were hoping for a different successor to Barack Obama.
Malte Hofer-Kallmann with that report. And news just coming in right now is that President-elect Donald Trump has arrived at the White House for talks with President Barack Obama on the transition of power. Now, I'm now joined by my colleague from the social media desk. Sela, this is a topic that, you know, Africans are still commenting about, isn't it?
It is, and even, I mean, there are a couple of hashtags floating around on African Twitter, things like not my president and Trump protest. And I mean, these are actually phrases that have been used by Trump critics in the US, but they're also being shared a lot on the Trump, on the African continent.
I mean, I think the whole world feels as if they have a new president-elect.
Or not, in this case. I mean, people are saying it's not my president, yeah. But, so, I mean, people are sharing pictures of the anti-Trump protests, as we just heard, that were happening in the US yesterday. And also, if you look on Twitter, you'll see different shades of the argument now, because some people are saying, for example, a Trump supporter was saying, so we must accept election results when they win, but they will not accept our victory.
That must have been a Trump critic.
No, that was actually a Trump supporter saying
okay.
that. So because he was criticizing Clinton supporters for saying he is not my president, and a Trump critic wrote, "I will give Donald Trump the same respect he offered President Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, which is none." Uh-huh. So people are taking it a bit, you know, they're taking a tough.
Yeah, I think people are talking more about the issues.
Yes, I mean in Africa, people are a bit more emotionally detached from it. So, for example, one person wrote, "We should focus on the real problem." And he also posted a picture saying, which is a picture of Morpheus from Matrix saying, "All presidents are only front men to distract you from the real people who run the country."
That was a bit cryptic.
Yeah, I mean that's just a film fan saying that. And another person said, I think wanted to remind the U.S. that it is a democratic country. So, for example, he posted a picture of all U.S. presidents since 1980, which are five presidents from Ronald Reagan to Obama.
To Obama, yes.
Yeah, and then a comparison to all Zimbabwean presidents since 1980, and he says that's just President Mugabe throughout.
But wait. Although we must be a bit careful there, as Mugabe became prime minister in 1980, but only took office as president in 1987. I wonder why people say he's been president since 1980. Anyway,
it seems
but
like Sela a long
also
time.
Had a few reactions on our yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he was luring behind the scenes. But Sela, we had also had a few reactions on our own Facebook page.
Exactly. I mean, our colleagues this morning, Crispin Mwakideo, who you've heard on the show, and Jesse Wingard, they had a chat about Africa and reactions to the US elections on Facebook Live, and many people commented, but mainly on Barack Obama's legacy.
And many people commented, I think, were very disappointed with Obama's role in Africa, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one person, for instance, said, to be sincere, Obama did more harm than good to the continent. His legacies will include Libya, Boko Haram, and the Arab Spring.
Really?
Yeah. And other people were saying, I'm a Kenyan, and as an African, we have absolutely nothing to be happy about. Obama and all the people in power had...
Anyway, Stella, we have to leave it at that. You know, we'll be back, you know, for the second part of this social media. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, students at the University of Pretoria speak of the challenges of reading for their exams online after the closure of their campus.
It's difficult to study with something online when you're used to someone where you can see them and ask them and interact with them. It was quite difficult because you're home.
And we're still monitoring the debate in South Africa's parliament for you on social media.
But first, let's go to South Sudan, where a three-year conflict continues to mete out more misery and untold suffering to civilians across the country. According to the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, an increasing number of South Sudanese will continue to go hungry in the coming months. High food prices are making it impossible for many to have three meals a day. From Nairobi, Wake Wudu filed this report.
Margaret Victor is a civil society activist and a resident of Juba. She recounts how the prices of some basic food items and other commodities have increased so much recently that she can now barely afford them. She says a kilogram of sugar, which used to cost 30 or 40 South Sudanese pounds 4 months ago, now costs 100 South Sudanese pounds, which is roughly equivalent to $1.30. The price rises are having a serious impact on people's food intake.
Before, people can afford meal for 2 to 3, but nowadays you cannot afford one meal in a day. It's really, really difficult. Say the prices are adding to the twice. For example, when you want to buy a meat for 50, now you can buy it for 200 or 300. Before, we used to buy for a sole for one pound at least. Nowadays, there is no sole for 1 pound. It's 5 pounds.
33-year-old Charles Bakata is another Juba resident. He too has stopped buying key food items simply because he can no longer afford them.
You know, there are certain foods that I used to buy. I used to enjoy them almost every day, but now I shouldn't eat. Perhaps like meat, I eat meat once a week. This in itself has not only affected me. I have a little work that I do, so I'm able to buy meat once in a week. What about the ones who do not have any work?
Bakata says he is cutting back not only on food, but also on other basic necessities he would normally buy for himself and his family. He says he has stopped buying clothes. The clothes he wears now he bought 2 years ago. Food insecurity in South Sudan has reached crisis proportions. FAO, the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization, said in a report released earlier this week that the number of people suffering from severe food insecurity in the country had now risen to 3.7 million, that is just under a third of the population. The figure of 3.7 million represents a dramatic increase of 1 million compared to last year. Abdul Osman, FAO Senior Program Officer in South Sudan, says this rise has been caused by the failure of farmers to cultivate during the planting season. During the first planting season of this year, harvests were down by 50% compared to the same time last year. He says these harvest losses are serious.
The increase in this number at this time is very critical because it indicates that in 2017, the food insecurity situation is going to deteriorate very high, rapidly, and the risk of famine would increase in most parts of South Sudan.
Harvests have provided some reprieve despite being lower than last year, but FAO experts warn that the benefits will be short-lived as local stocks will deplete rapidly. Food insecurity is expected to become even worse in 2017, and the risk of famine is real, especially for South Sudan's more vulnerable communities. Osman says the Equatorial region, which is responsible for over half of the country's annual net cereal production, has been badly hit by the recent violence. In active conflict areas, harvest losses have been severe and increasing. Numbers of farmers were unable to plan for the second season because of the fighting. FAO experts also warn the displacement of people from those areas will have profound effects on agricultural production.
Wake Wudu reporting from Nairobi.
Uzone.
Welcome to the Uzone segment, in which we bring you stories about issues that directly affect the youth in their quest for a brighter future. In this week's Uzone, we head back to South Africa, where students at the University of Pretoria are having to study for their exams online. This came after recent fees protests forced the university's administration to cancel classes and transfer the coursework online. As Gaia Manku reports from Pretoria, this has become a challenge to most students since they cannot afford internet costs to study online for longer periods.
This is how the University of Pretoria sounds like on most days. If it wasn't for the signs on buildings that read architecture, IT or engineering, you would mistake the university main campus for a botanical garden. Following the protests for free higher education, which have in some cases turned violent, for the moment no student is allowed on campus without an authorization. Classes, after being suspended, are now held online, as Nomvula, an engineering student, explains.
It's difficult to study with something online when you're used to someone where you can see them and ask them and interact with them. It was quite difficult because you're home. So, yeah, you couldn't do anything much because you don't have Wi-Fi, internet access to do everything, yeah.
Now, the problem is you having to download the stuff.
Yes, that's what...
Yeah.
Who are those files?
Because the files are big. It's your...
Very big. And you find that, like, the PowerPoint with the sound is just, like, 66 megabytes. And you still have to do the test.
Yes.
So you still need more data to do that.
To do the test online.
20-year-old Mpumelelo and Sibongile are friends and classmates studying towards a bachelor degree in management. Their studies inspired them on how to solve the university fee crisis in South Africa.
For once, I think most of us varsity students, when we leave school, we go work for these private companies.
Yes.
So I feel like private companies should,
they
need to invest in
university.
Yes, higher education learning. I think they should invest in that.
It is a special day when I meet the students. Some of them have been allowed on campus for the first time in 4 weeks. The university decided to schedule several exams in one day to minimize the time students have to be present on campus.
Because we were told there's only a specific amount of students who are allowed on campus at one time, so they're making sure that every student writes. I think they are anticipating a higher failure rate because of the stress and because of the cramped style of the work that needs to be done. But in some ways it can teach discipline because we had to be more vigilant about what we were doing.
Joshua, a civil engineering major, is overall pleased with the fact that the university didn't cancel the exams. His friend Herman, a future electrical engineer, is not so convinced.
It was fine until they decided to tell us that we were writing semester tests and we got two tests in one day, and that's when things changed. Because we don't know, on holiday, and all of a sudden now this pressure, and yeah, it's bad.
Most students, although not all actively involved in the protests, are supportive of a strategy for free education. In one of the most unequal countries in the world, they don't want access to education to become yet another broken promise of democratic South Africa.
Gaia Manko with that report from Pretoria.
And the discussion about university fees is continuing in South Africa and on social media, usually under the hashtag fees must fall. But, for example, yesterday a former student, Nhebo Dlamini, was released on bail, and he was arrested during the protests for his conduct during those protests, and so his name was trending. And today, more students from the University of KwaZulu-Natal were also released. And I'm sure that the Fees Must Fall protest will continue in the future, and so South African students will be struggling to keep up with their studies.
It's like it's going to gain momentum again, anyway.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Speaking out.
To Burundi now, where media freedom remains restricted. Many journalists, especially foreign correspondents, are often harassed and sometimes arrested for reporting on stories that are presumed to be against the government of President Pierre Nkurunziza. Since the Burundi crisis last year, there's been a systematic crackdown on journalists and some independent media houses have been closed. Many have fled to exile. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nirora reports.
That was Radio Bonesha FM, which was forcefully taken off the air on the 14th of May last year in the aftermath of a failed coup against Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. Since then, three radio stations, Radio Bonesha FM, Renaissance Radio and the Television, and the African Public Radio, have also been stopped from broadcasting on the Burundian territory. They were accused of collaborating with the coup plotters and insurgents. Meanwhile, journalists, especially correspondents of international media, complain that they are being denied the freedom they need to do their jobs properly. Moses Avjarimana told DW they are hampered by the suspicions that government officials have about foreign media.
The most important thing is just to get the suit to the sources, and that's what we do always. But sometimes it's really very difficult because there is a bad perception with the foreign media that they try to incite violence in the country and they try to report negative reports on the international media. So sometimes it's a little bit challenging, and even to get most especially to the government sources, because they think that you actually want to manipulate some information that you're going to give out which is not right. And I think there's lack of trust of the government with the foreign medias.
Last month, a U.S. journalist, Julia Steers, and her fixer, Gildas Yihundimundu, who is a correspondent of the BBC in Burundi, were harassed and arrested. They were alleged by the authorities to have destroyed evidence of atrocities committed by insurgents, the term which the government generally uses to describe protesters. The U.S. journalist was released a few hours later, but her fixer spent a night in custody. A local journalist, Blaise Pascal Kararumiye, who works for Radio Isanganiro in Karusi province, was also arrested one night last month. He was later released. Police said he was interrogated about journalists from the Voice of America who were in Karusi province where he's based. However, the radio manager at his place of work assumes that he was arrested for reporting that the Imbonerakure youths of the ruling party had been assigned two duties normally undertaken by security agents. The director of Radio Isanganiro, Samsoman Iradukunda, denounced the arrest of the journalist.
Arresting someone at night, if that person is not a criminal, is an offense. Police are not allowed to arrest someone at night unless he's a criminal. Besides, we were informed that he was arrested for information he worked on and that had been investigated, which means that police should have waited until daytime before interrogating him.
According to Maniradukunda, the arrest of the journalist testifies to the bad relationships between the administration and the media.
Such an arrest shows that there is a problem between some administration authorities and journalists. That's why I request those officials to allow journalists to do their job freely.
Apollinaire Nyora compiled that report. And there's still more breaking news coming in. South Africa's president has survived a no-confidence vote in parliament, despite opposition parties calling on the ruling ANC lawmakers to vote him out of office. Sarah, this is a story you've been following, and you're still, you know, reading what the Twitter is, you know, talking about.
Yes, I am. And there are a lot of things coming in, a lot of tweets coming in about this. South Africans have been following this very keenly. So for example, Tulani Girana wrote, "Motion has officially failed and ANC supporters are singing in the gallery." Mm-hmm. And another person wrote, "Hashtag no confidence in our system," because no confidence is about this no confidence vote that was being debated in parliament. And there are other people who say ANC shows South Africans don't count, only they count. So there's lots of critique of the ANC and Jacob Zuma.
Yeah, but again, I mean, there were 214 lawmakers voted against the motion and 126 voted in favor. I mean, interesting, you know, halfway the mark here.
Yes, so I mean, it is still a very controversial topic, and we don't know. Perhaps, I mean, this could happen again, very soon.
It was the third time that, you know, this motion is moved.
Yes, and one person says, another bid to throw Jacob Zuma off his throne, and once again the ANC parliament have protected him. Karma will catch you eventually. So that it looks like a continuing story there.
Yeah, I followed the debate on TV, and you know, it was really a little bit chaotic. You know, there were chaotic scenes, parliamentarians, you know, throwing insults at each other. Anyway, we know that in the South African Parliament, isn't it?
Yes, it definitely is like that. And I mean, an hour ago, the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, were still very confident. They said, "We are going to bring Zuma down today."
Well, Sela, we have to leave it at that. And before we go, a reminder of our main stories. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma has survived a no-confidence vote. We've also been hearing from students at the University of Pretoria about the challenges of reading for their exams online. Thanks for listening. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Sela Oneko.
Goodbye and take care.